In New York on Friday, a court came to a settlement over the $300 million fortune of Huguette Clark, a woman whose father had been a copper baron, but a woman who not many people knew much about, and even members of her family didn't know that she had been living in a hospital for quite a few years. Her story came to light recently because of a brand new book by my next guest. His name is Bill Dedman. He's an investigative reporter for NBC News, and the book is called Empty Mansions, about Huguette Clark's wealth and reclusive life and the houses that she had not lived in for a very long time. Bill, welcome to America Weekend.
Hi, Paul. Thank you.
The story starts with you looking for a house in Connecticut, right?
Yes, we're looking a little bit above our price range, but I saw that the most expensive house on the market in Connecticut at $24 million. It had been marked down from 35.
Oh, it's a deal.
Yes. Had not been lived in since 1951. Well, I went over to ask about it, and the caretaker shuffles out to the gate, and he asks me if maybe the owner has been dead all these years. So I start looking her up. I discover that she's the daughter of W.A. Clark, who in 1911, the New York Times was trying to decide who the richest person in America was, and it decided it was either John D. Rockefeller or W.A. Clark from his copper mining fortune in Montana and Arizona. He was a disreputable U.S. senator, got tossed out of the U.S. Senate, and then here's his daughter, apparently, still alive in the Obama administration.
Wow.
So it turns out she has a nicer house in California overlooking the Pacific, and Santa Barbara has not been there since the 50s. It's been the subject of lore and legend in California for decades. No Clarks have been visiting. And she has three apartments on Fifth Avenue in New York City, the view that everybody wants of Central Park, 15,000 square feet. Mm. And she hasn't been there in at least 20 years. Well, it turned out that she had chosen to live in a hospital. She was living in a very simple hospital room in New York City with her photo albums and a couple of dolls. She was an inveterate doll collector with a $2 million doll collection. She had a few there with her in the hospital. And so we were trying to figure out what happened. How did this fortune rise? How did it get spent? And why would anybody own these houses and not live in them?
It is a really amazing story. She was in the hospital for skin cancer, which had disfigured her face.
Yes.
And when did she die?
So she went in the hospital in 1991. She was in there for 7,400 nights. She died in May of 2011 at the age of 104. She was 2 weeks shy of her 105th birthday. And it turned out, my co-author is her cousin, Paul Clark Newell, and it turned out that he'd spoken on the phone with her for many years. They'd corresponded. And she turns out to be a chipper, lovely, elegant woman. She was living quite simply. She didn't even tell her family she was in the hospital. But he would call her attorney and leave a message, and she would call him back. And she recalled, for example, that she and her family had tickets on the Titanic's return trip in 1912. But she explained rather matter-of-factly, well, the boat sank, and so we had to take a different boat.
Wow. 20 years in the hospital, and no one in her family knew she was in the hospital?
No, and she didn't like the hospital food either.
So she had food brought in?
She would eat the hospital food, but for example, there was a cafeteria worker who brought her warm milk in the morning. She gave her a check once for $25,000 as a tip. Her best friend would bring her asparagus with hollandaise sauce, and she would bring brioche, the sweetbread from France. She was born in Paris, and she remembered that from her youth. That and her white cashmere sweaters were her only luxury in the hospital room.
Did she turn the hospital room into more than just a hospital room hospital bed and chairs and that terrible TV with the remote that never works?
It looks exactly like that one, and with the cheap wood cabinets and a simple bed, and she had a few belongings in paper bags, and she had her photo albums, and she had her phone. She was a very chatty person on the phone. Now, I've said dolls. I said she lives in a hospital room in paper bags, and you're thinking she's crazy. She was an artist. She wrote beautiful letters, wonderful handwriting. She had friendships. She had long friendships in France and people she corresponded with. In a way, if you're a recluse, okay, you don't go out of the house for maybe 50 years and you don't go out of the hospital room for 20, you're a recluse.
Mm-hmm.
But if you die with 20,000 pages of correspondence, in another way, you're something of a world traveler. She had friends all around the world, and she was amazingly generous to friends and to strangers.
Did she befriend people in the hospital, and did they know that she was worth a few $100 million?
Well, her fellow patients didn't seem to know, but the hospital administration certainly knew. They knew who they had.
They smelled money.
Yes, and so the hospital president would come to visit with her. The hospital president's mother would come to sit with her, send her gifts. They pestered her for gifts for years. She resisted them for the most part, but she did one point surprise them with one of her paintings. She gave them a Manet painting. It turned out to be worth $3.5 million. And it's a nonprofit hospital. They were glad to have it. They kept seeking gifts from her, and in the end, they got $1 million in the will out of her more than $300 million. So you might say they were dreadfully disappointed.
Yeah. Did her doctor get anything in the will?
Yes. The doctor got gifts through the years. She paid about $700,000 to him and his family in gifts all through the years. And he got $100,000 in the will. But the big gift recipient was her nurse. She had private duty, registered nurse, 24 hours a day. But the daytime nurse, who worked 12 hours a day for many years without taking a day off, received a total of $31 million in gifts for her family. She's no doubt the wealthiest registered nurse in the world with a $210,000 Bentley. But she, in the settlement of the case, she had to give $5 million of that back. So she's lost $5 million, but she did okay.
And the case, which I referred to being settled on Friday, or maybe they're close to settlement as of Friday, was because there were two wills, right?
Yeah, the key thing is that she cut her family out of the will.
Yeah.
The last will that she signed left nothing to her family.
And these two wills were executed only about a month and a half apart back in 2005, so that's where the confusion came in, right?
Well, that's part of the confusion. In the book, you'll see that the sequence of those wills made good sense. The first will was really intended to give a gift to the nurse. The second will listed a bunch of beneficiaries, the people near her, a goddaughter, her doctor, and the attorney and the accountant. They were in there, too. And the family she had last seen, they think they might have seen her at a funeral in 1968, but the last time they recall meeting or talking with her was in 1957. Most of the relatives had never met her. They were much younger than she. But they've gone to court. The tentative settlement would give more than $30 million to the family and pay their estate taxes and pay their attorney. So that's a clear 30-some million dollars for her relatives whom she didn't really know.
Yeah, these people who didn't know, who include, by the way, 20 grandnieces, grandnephews, great-grandnieces, great-grandnephews, all descended from her father's first marriage. Of course, when they heard, she's rich and she's related to me, they must have all come together and said, me want some.
Well, some of them had some affection for her. Some of them had spoken on the phone with her or with her mother or had visited the apartment decades ago. Most of them didn't know her, but a few, I'd have to grant, had some affection and some respect for their very private, dear great aunt. In the audiobook, you can hear her conversations with my co-author, her cousin Paul, and she was on the phone quite pleasant and elegant and free to talk, but in person, she was very private. She didn't do well with strangers. She didn't do well even with family. She said she couldn't go back to France because she was afraid there'd be another French Revolution. She was a woman with fears and some phobias, and she dealt with it by staying at home and continuing her artistic endeavors and her fun, her dolls and her dollhouses.
Here's the important question, though, Bill, that I left out. How much of a down payment did you make on the estate in Connecticut?
It's still for sale, by the way. It's only about $15 million
now. Oh, wow. It's marked down. Let me see how much I got on me.
So it is available.
It's an amazing story and a really great read. My producer, Anne Marie, and I have both really been enjoying this story. And I thank you so much for telling it, Bill.
Thank you very much. And there are a lot of pictures in the book.
Yeah, the book is called Empty Mansions. Bill Dedman here with Paul Harris on America Weekend.
Oh, man.